Welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Manicharian of SIS. This week, instead of our usual podcast, we are going to be airing the audio from the finals of the SIS Football Analytics Challenge that happened last night. That's July 29th, 2020. We had many contestants submit really great research with the data that we put out there, and we narrowed it down to three fantastic finalists. A big thank you to the SIS R&D team who went through each and every one of those, and we had real debates to narrow it down to our final three. And then Corey March, who really ran point on putting the whole event together. Great job by him. And besides the contestants and the finalists, we had great judges, including Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders and, of course, the Off the Charts Football Podcast, and John Park of the Indianapolis Colts, their manager of research and strategy. He came on to also provide his feedback to the contestants. So it was an awesome night. We really got to see some awesome analysis. And best of all, it was all for a good cause. We raised over $4,000 and counting now, and you can still donate on our GoFundMe page. It's all going to the United Negro College Fund. So it was a great event for a great cause, and we're going to play the audio for you now. Now, you can also find this. This was streamed live on YouTube. So if you want to also get the visual component, see the presentations, you can go to the YouTube page, search Sports Info Solutions, and you can find the Football Analytics Challenge there. We're going to give you the audio here now so that you can listen to it if you prefer the podcast medium. And then if you go to the GitHub page for the SIS Football Analytics Challenge, it's all publicly there. You can see each and every submission that came in, and we created a folder for the finalists, so you can see everything that went on there. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to Corey, who was the host last night, and he is going to announce the Football Analytics Challenge. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to the live finals of the SIS Football Analytics Challenge. Thank you for joining us this evening, where the three finalist groups will be presenting their research and vying to be named the winner of this inaugural contest. I'm your host, Corey March. I head up the business development team at Sports Info Solutions. Before I announce who's joining me on the broadcast, I'll give a quick summary of the topic that the teams will be presenting on in just a few minutes. So contestants received access to proprietary Sports Info Solutions data from the 2019 NFL season, and they used it to determine the core question, which is the most valuable defensive line position? Then from there, they were asked to quantify the distribution of talent between the defensive line positions and give some insight into how those values may change based on in-game situations. One at a time, each of the teams will be given 15 minutes to share their presentations, followed by a Q&A from the judges. Without further ado, let me introduce those judges. First, we have Matt Manicharian, my colleague at Sports Info Solutions. Matt is a former NFL scout and is now the Vice President of Football and Research at SIS. Next, we have Aaron Schatz, Head of Football Outsiders. Football Outsiders is one of the earliest football analytics websites and still definitely among the best, well known for their proprietary metrics like DVOA. You're probably familiar with Aaron. He appears on the Off the Charts podcast each week along with Matt. And finally, we have John Park, manager of football research and strategy for the Indianapolis Colts. You may have seen John on TV last season. They showed him and George Lee in the booth during the Colts' primetime game against the Chiefs in Week 5. The Colts beat the eventual Super Bowl champs on the road that night. And Pat McAfee tweeted about John's hidden talent as a rapper. So everyone was a big winner that night. Speaking of big winners, we have our three finalist groups hoping to impress the judges and win big tonight. Let's introduce you to them. The group presenting first is made up of Andrew Rogan and Rob Bernhardt. They both attended Middlebury College and recently graduated in 2019. Andrew was a starting offensive lineman for 3 seasons on the school's football team. Now he's working in the player personnel department for the Army football program. Rob was also a student athlete at Middlebury. He was the captain of the men's water polo team. He's now working as a research assistant for the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. Group number 2 is made up of Zach Feldman, Michael Egli, and Anthony Reinhardt. Zach graduated from The Ohio State University in May with a major in economics and a minor in computer and information science. Michael is going into his junior year at Ohio State this fall, pursuing a degree in data science.
Iowa State.
Good correction. Better football team. And we have Anthony, a data analyst at State Auto Insurance. And finally, group number 3, our only solo artist. He goes by the name of Emmett Kiernan. Emmett recently graduated from Northeastern University with a degree in economics. Welcome to all our contestants and our judges and our viewers. On that note, let's get the presentations underway with group number 1. Andrew or Rob will share their presentation, and once they start, they'll be given 15 minutes.
All right, yeah, just ahead of time, I'm going to be giving the entire presentation just for the sake of time, and we ran through it before, so we should be all good to go technically. So let me know if you guys can see everything okay.
Looks good.
Everything's all right? All right, with that, let's get started. I'm Andrew Rogan. I'm presenting on behalf of myself and my partner, Robert Bernhardt. Our presentation is called Gap Responsible, Understanding Defensive Line Player Value by Addressing Play-Specific Context and Player Responsibility. Let's dive in. So throughout our entire project, we really wanted to consider for 2 main important tenets, and we want to make sure that we accounted for those at every single step of the process. And the first one is what we're just loosely calling context. And we believe that context is critical in evaluating player effectiveness, and that player performance or effectiveness depends on many factors that need to be accounted for, such as situation. And when I say situation, I mean like down, distance, etc., where the play is taking place on the field, whether you're in the red zone, etc. Moving forward, diving a little deeper in the football is responsibility and assignment. You know, it's easy to grasp that like some positions may or may not have different effects than others, may or may not have more impact. And, you know, for example, I was an O-lineman. O-linemen just aren't as important as quarterbacks. Everybody seems to know that. But, you know, it's easy to grasp that. And that kind of variation caused by differences in responsibility exists within the defensive line. And we say that that causes interposition variation, you know, differences in different positions within the D-line. So defensive ends versus defensive tackles, it's clear to see how there's a variation there's variation caused by different assignments, like defensive ends are more regularly going to set the edge, defensive tackles are more likely to be clogging gaps, a little less involved in the pass game, we traditionally think. So that kind of variation is very clear in the defensive line cross-positionally. But then diving a little deeper into football-specific stuff, even within a position, there's variation. So we call that intra-position variation. So zero techniques, you know, we traditionally think of them as odd front defenders. They're playing 2 gaps most likely. They're either gap or player conscious versus a 1 technique who's going to be a gap responsible player and probably going to be a little different, involved a little differently, a little more in the pass rush. So it's clear that even within positions, even within defensive ends and defensive tackles, there's going to be a variety of assignment, a variety of responsibility. So even deeper is what we call intra-player variation. My example here is Joey Bosa's 5 technique versus Joey Bosa's 4 technique. Not every player lines up with the same technique every play. And it's reasonable to assume that they're not as effective at each position as they are at another, right? So Joey Bosa might be super effective as a 5, but as a 4, he might not be as effective. So we want to make sure that we account for that intra-player variation as well. And additionally, another factor that we want to make sure that we account for is proximity to the point of attack. On run point plays, it's pretty clear, it's pretty intuitive that players who are further away from the point of attack may have less of an impact than players who are much closer to that. And to get at this, to quantify this, we created this linear gap system. It's based off of your standardized alignment system. And what we did was we just put defensive linemen, we ordered them linearly and put the intended run gap on the same scale. So when you do this, you can just easily quantify the distance that a player is from the intended gap, right? So that's just an easy way for us to quantify and control for the fact that players may have different levels of responsibility within the same run play. So moving further, we've spent a lot of time working on front identification. This is something that comes from my background as an offensive lineman. Offenses spend a lot of time figuring out how to identify defenses and classify their formations into structures that work the same, that work in similar manners, right? So the way we did this is by counting the number of covered offensive linemen inside the cylinder, which some people know as the guard box. In effect, we're just counting the number of stance D linemen from guard to guard, right? And we break that down into five front types, odd, even, bear, goal line, and money, each of which functions in a similar way. So this is going to be kind of an insight for us for formation and a little bit of scheme in order to dig at assignment. We can count for assignment a little more. And then our second core consideration is production statistics. And what we're going to say is that production statistics are somewhat misleading. Production statistics on the defensive side of the ball do not factor in often situation, the effect of teammates, or of the effect of scheme. A play's most important player may often not record any statistics. And the first example I'm going to give you of this is, I hinted at before, is player control, right? When I'm talking about player control, I'm talking about odd front defenses that where the defensive linemen are not gap conscious, they're player conscious, right? They are supposed to be using up the offensive linemen in order to protect their linebackers, right? So what happens? The linebackers are the ones who rack up stats. They rack up tackles for loss. They rack up sacks. They rack up all the tackles in the book, right? And what happens is D linemen don't get anything. They don't get any traditional production statistics. They don't get even advanced production statistics. You rarely see them getting like even pressures, right? So player control is just an example of how defensive linemen, like traditional statistics can be misleading, and often the most important players might not report any statistics. And our second example of this is my favorite blitz in the book, America's Blitz, which I love so much that I drew it up. It's called America's Blitz because every team in America runs some variation of this blitz. In the variation I've drawn up for you, you see the defense, the goal of the defense is to backdoor the slide by having one defensive player play over two gaps, the long slant two gaps away. Right here, you see the left side defensive end is long slanting the A-gap. What this does is it uses up, it delays the exchange between the tackle and the guard in order to free up the Mike and the outside linebacker to his side. What this results in is a two-on-one on the running back, resulting ultimately in a free rusher in an ideal world. So what does this mean? It means the outside linebackers, one of them gets a pressure, one gets a sack off of a free rush, effectively. And the defensive lineman who caused that, perhaps the most important player, gets nothing. They don't get any production statistics, right? So what do we need to account for? We need to account for players who might not be getting any production statistics, even though they're potentially the most important on the play, right? So how are we going to do this? The way we propose to do this is what we're calling our agnostic modeling approach. In this, we treat player valuation through statistics as unknowable. In effect, we determine the value, in our case, an EPA per play, that a player brings solely by being on the field. So we compare plays in which a player is present to plays in which a player is not, and our assumption is that any difference in EPA is attributable to that player, right? And we call this difference in EPA marginal EPA, so like the individual value that a player contributes. It's important to note that like there's a difficulty here in plays in which, you know, the player is present might be systematically a little different from ones where they are not on the field. Like some guys might play against a certain personnel grouping. So we control for that as much as possible, but something that would be particularly helpful for us in the future would be if we could get more offensive data to control for this. But nevertheless, we still feel like this is a strong approach. So moving forward, just a brief outline of our models. We like to think of this as one model that like increases in complexity at every level. And the base level, model one, is a naive model with situational and team controls. with player-specific individual effects, and then group effects based upon roster position. Then we move into our more complex set of models, model set 2. We subset into fronts. We subset front-wise, right? So we subset into even fronts and odd fronts. And then what we do is we also account for alignment in these models. We get a little bit of that intra-player variation in there. Then progressing even further into model set 3, we determine who is most important on a given play type using gap proximity and alignment. What I mean by this, by play type, is run versus pass. Who's more effective on runs? Who has a greater average impact on runs? And who has more of a greater average impact on pass plays? So diving into model 1, we just drew this fancy graphic here for the econometric model, but not digging deep into the subscript. I'm just going to say, basically, what we did here again is this is our naive model. We create binary variables for every player in the data set, and what we do is we also create what we call the baseline, which is players who have less than 100 snaps. So those that baseline group of players, what we did was just rename them and we called them base. So when we calculated in the regression, they were kind of the omitted factor group. So everybody else in the data set is compared to that baseline group. I just want to make that clear. Okay, so once we calculate the coefficients for every player, we just aggregate those based on their roster position. So we only estimate one coefficient for each player, and then we aggregate those based on their roster position. So moving forward, our summary statistics, for us, the mean was the most important thing, and also I should note that EPA is coded from the offense's perspective, so a more negative EPA is going to be mean that the defense is more effective on those plays, right? So if you look over here at the mean, we see that defensive tackles have the lowest coefficient, average coefficient, which means that they have the greatest, they add the most value they add the most value of any position, followed by defensive ends, then followed by linebackers. If you also take note, the standard deviation is highest for defensive ends. So if we progress a little further, just look at this density function. We see that, again, that mean for defensive tackles, the green graph, is a little to the left of defensive ends and linebackers. But we also should note is the orange graph, defensive ends, is the shallowest curve of the three, right? So there's the greatest spread, the greatest visual dispersion amongst the three. And you should also note that on the left-hand side there, that defensive end curve rises above the other two curves, like as we get to the extremes. So our interpretation for this is that defensive tackles add the most EPA per play, and linebackers provide the least value per play, defensive ends somewhere in the middle. In addition, defensive ends have the largest spread in marginal EPA, and they're also somewhat more high-end outlier defensive ends than defensive tackles and linebackers. So they're more transcendent D ends than D tackles, linebackers, etc. So moving on, model set 2, this is where we move on to include front type as well as alignment. So we subset into odd and even. We have more, there are more front types. Like I said, there are 5, but odd and even are the most common by far. So what we did doing this is we now concatenate the player's name on their alignment, right? So when we do that, we estimate a coefficient for every player at a certain alignment within a certain scheme, within a certain front type. And what this allows us to do is it allows us to cancel out alignments for which players took less than a certain number of snaps. So like if Joey Bosa took 5 snaps last year, as a 2 technique, we wouldn't include that. We wouldn't calculate a coefficient for that, right? So then from that, we calculate those individual coefficients, and we extract those based on play-specific alignments and the front type. So now we can group together where players are more accurately. So if they're 3 technique in an even front, if they're 3 technique in an even front, well, that's usually a defensive tackle. Or if they're a 4i in an odd front, that's probably a defensive end playing there. So we can more accurately group given these technique alignments. So moving on to our summary stats, just briefly glancing at this. The means for defensive ends and edges, roughly the same. And both of those are considerably higher than defensive tackles. The standard deviation for defensive ends is a little bit higher. And then for even, what we see is that defensive tackles have to create the most value, followed by defensive ends, followed by edges, and then followed by defensive ends. So look at the dispersions. The most important thing that I want to take note of here is that blue graph, that blue curve on both sides. We see is that edge defenders in both front types are the most clustered together. That's really important to note. So our interpretation of this model is that in odd fronts, defensive ends and edge defenders have similar average marginal EPAs. So they generate the most both of those positions, and defensive tackles generate less value relative to those two. Edge defenders' talent is rather heavily clustered, and the other two are a little bit more widely dispersed. In even fronts, defensive tackles provide the best average marginal EPA. Defensive tackles add the most value to the team, whereas defensive ends have the largest dispersion of talent. Model set three, this is where we split into run and pass, right? So in this model, we're also introducing our gap proximity effect, right? The gaps away model, or excuse me, variable that I introduced before. Effectively, it just means that we're adding an interaction term on our player coefficients. So we still estimate our individual player coefficients. And then on top of that, we estimate the value of being further away or being closer to the ball, depending on which way you look at it. Then we extract based in the run model on roster position, that like breaking that further down into alignment and aggregating by alignment in that model. So would have been like a little too much, would have overcomplicated things way too much. And then in the passing model, we are aggregating based on alignment, like in the second set of models. So our summary statistic, this is a run play model. Defensive ends have the lowest average mean, generating most value, followed by defensive tackles, followed by linebackers. And then we see gaps away. Every single coefficient in the gaps away coefficients is positive, and that's important to note. The visualization, the biggest thing that stands out here, defensive tackles most closely clustered in the run play model. So moving on to the pass play set. Right? Defensive ends have the greatest average EPA, or excuse me, have the greatest, add the most value on average. In addition, they're followed by defensive tackles and then followed by edge defenders. Defensive ends, again, also have the highest standard deviation. Let's look at that dispersion again. Most notable thing again, the most clustered position is the edges, and then defensive ends is the most spread out. So our interpretation for this, right, on run plays, defensive ends generate the highest average value, followed by defensive tackles and then edges. Linebackers have the highest dispersion of value. And then additionally, when it comes to our gaps away coefficient, we find that good players generate more value when closer to the intended gap, especially defensive tackles. And that's referring to that gaps away coefficient. Remember I noted that all those were positive? That just means that as players get further away from the ball, they are the point of attack, they generate less value, and that effect is greatest for defensive tackles, which makes sense because those guys are a little slower and they're right in the mix. In pass plays, defensive ends provide the best average marginal EPA and dispersion, and linebackers provide the least value and also have the smallest dispersion. Conclusions. So our conclusions with regards to questions 1 and 2, marginal EPA is broadly comparable across positions, but it is dependent upon certain contextual factors. Defensive tackles generate higher value in even fronts, and defensive ends have superior marginal EPA in odd fronts. Defensive ends have the widest dispersion of talent in any front, basically. That was kind of a consistent finding. And top defensive ends generate more value versus their own peers than defensive tackles and linebackers, more transcendent players. For question 3, teams should consider the number of snaps that they run at each front in the roster construction process. Not every team runs the fronts at the same rate. Like, you might switch between even and odd fronts differently, and you should consider for that ratio in calculating how much resources you should attribute to each position. Above baseline players additionally generate more value when closest to the point of attack. This is strongest for defensive tackles and negligible for linebackers. So basically, the most important players, the players generating the most value, are the ones closest to the point of attack. Just last slide, I'm just going to briefly run through this. Our limitations and extensions, we would like to control for the interaction between situational factors. That would be awesome. Include additional controls for offensive scheme. That's what I hinted at before. Play type, personnel, formation would be amazing. Account for teammate interactions and synergy. So like two guys being on the field at the same time is greater than the sum of its parts. We would like to include linebackers and coverage alignments since the data really only included linebackers close to the line of scrimmage. And then for gap and assignment variation, like what we were talking about before with where players are aligned, they don't always play the same gap as they line up in. You might slant after the snap. So if you can create an additional variable that, you know, records where the player plays after the snap. So if you start in the A gap, go to the B gap, record that. As well as matchup information, you know, which alignment they were blocked by. I also created this variable called directional gaps away. That's in the appendix. That would be an interesting alternative to gaps away distance. Final round. I'm just going to play the special thanks slide as well.
That was awesome. Thank you so much. I'll get into it with the first question for you. And you mentioned this a little bit in your limitations, but I'm curious to how your approach accounts for teammate effects. And what sort of effect they might have had on your results.
So if I'll get into this, so what we do is we do estimate coefficients for the on-field value for all players simultaneously. So in as much as we do that, we do control for teammate effects. What we were talking about specifically is the idea of certain synergy, so where the effect of player one being on the field and player two being on the field might add up something greater than the individual effects. And so the extension would try and look at specifically if particular groups of players really mesh together well and have a combined performance, but we didn't have time to fully reckon with a model that includes that.
Yeah, that would be tough, I think. But you're saying what you did do was accounting for whether or not players were on the field at the same time or whether one of them was on the field and one wasn't?
Yeah. We estimate all the coefficients simultaneously.
Gotcha. Thanks.
What we can't do is, like, estimate synergies, like Rob said. So, like, the synergistic effect of, like, Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa being on the field at the same time.
But you could tell the difference between just Melvin Ingram being on the field and just Joey Bosa or both of them.
Exactly.
Yep. Makes sense. Thank you. Aaron or John, did you guys have any questions?
You stole my question. I was going to ask about the same thing.
I got a question then while you think of another one, Aaron. You said a number of times that you considered context to plays and the proximity to the point of attack and the guys who were closest to the point of attack have greater value. Given your emphasis on context, did you make any considerations for the fact that teams might be running the ball away from their best players?
Yep. Yeah. That's kind of like something that when I presented this to Rob, like that was my initial idea. That was the first question he raised, and I raised two immediate things that I got from my experience playing O-line. Sorry to bring that fact up again. So basically, we played multiple teams where our goal was to run the ball at their best defensive lineman and not away from their best defensive lineman, right? One of the easiest things to do for a really good D lineman with really good getup is to trap him. Trapping him is great, right? And another thing you might want to consider is like, what if you're on the backside of a counter and you have a really good like one technique? Do you really want your center blocking the one technique who's a dog one-on-one? So I think that effect may exist, but I don't think it's as black and white as people think it might be, right? So, you know, there are certainly plenty of times where people aren't intentionally running at the best player. If that makes any sense.
Oh, it makes perfect sense. So I'm wondering if you took the extra step to quantitatively measure that instead of just kind of going off your personal experience.
Yeah. So what we do exactly in the model is that we estimate two coefficients for every qualifying player, which is players with over the certain number of snaps to have a consistently large enough sample size. So we estimate the on-field coefficient, which is same as before, And then we also estimate an interaction where we look at the number of gaps away from the point of attack that each player lines up in. So we have, say, for Aaron Donald, who we talk about a lot because his name starts with A, so he's always at the top of our regressions. Aaron Donald, for instance, we have a coefficient for him where he is on the field, and then we have a coefficient which measures the value, which is given that he's on the field, how many gaps away is Aaron Donald lined up from where the play goes. And so then the goal of that gaps away coefficient is to say, when Aaron Donald is closer to the play, does the EPA for the offense go down? And so generally the positive coefficients on the gaps away coefficient says that when you get farther away from players like Aaron Donald, that EPA goes up, which is, of course, good for the offense. So therefore, the defensive players, the talented defensive players being in closer proximity to the play leads to an improvement in EPA for the defense.
So quantitative.
Is it double counting? Sorry, because with the agnostic modeling approach, I would think that you would want to kind of keep the gap distance out of it. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I suppose it's not 100% agnostic, but it is in as much as we don't consider like a statistic, like a sack or anything.
Right.
We just record like a very baseline thing that can be measured for every player on every play. You know, we sort of think of a way to sort of augment it while keeping true to the broad principle.
Makes sense. I like your approach.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Just one more thing, and I'm sorry if this is a dumb question, but how is our positions defined? Did you define who is a defensive end, who's a defensive tackle, and who's an edge by how they're listed on rosters, or did you define it by where they line up specifically?
We did that in two ways. So for our naive model, we did that based on roster position. And then in our technique-based models, we did that based upon their alignment and then the scheme type. And that was kind of what I was getting at before. Like, if you have a B-gap defender, it might be unclear whether he's normally a D-end or a D-tackle, but if you can specify that he's an odd 4-I, that's a guy who's normally a D-end. So we classified by position and by front type. And then in the rare event that you have an odd 3 technique, you know, normally an even 3 technique is a big boy, he's a big D-tackle, right? If you, in the rare case that you have an odd D-tackle who's a 3, you know, he's probably going to be a DN. So we can consider for that too. And I have slides at the end if you want to see those as well.
Yep. Now we got to keep it moving. Before we go on, I turn it back to Corey. Is it a fair kind of summary of your findings to say that in odd fronts, the nose is relatively less valuable, yet in evens, the defensive tackles become more valuable?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We ready to move on, judges?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Awesome stuff.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Andrew, Rob, that was great stuff. Judges, thank you for your questions. We'll move things right along to group number 2 with Zach, Michael, and Anthony. You guys can take the screen and start your presentation whenever you're ready.
All right. So I'm Anthony. I'm going to lead off the presentation. I'm going to kind of touch on our setting of positions and also some of the priors that we had before we get into modeling. I'm going to pass it over to Michael. Zach's going to jump in, and then Michael will bring us home. So that, I think we can go ahead. The problems that we're facing here, that were the prompts for the competition are, kind of all based in positions. So, the most important step, I think, is going to be to start by establishing some positions and, then go, which positions are most valuable? What's the distribution of talent at those positions? And then, how does that change in different situations? So, go to the next slide, Michael. In terms of defining positions, our first kind of jump into that was to visualize how players are lining up on a given play. So we made this visualization to kind of get an idea of that. On the bottom, it shows the player technique that a player might be lined up at, showing the frequency with which a player at the bottom would line up at the same time as a player listed on the left side there on the y-axis. So, for example, if you're lined up with a 1 technique, you'll come out with a 3 technique on your opposite side, 75% of the plays that were listed in the data set. So one of the things that kind of gives you a sense of is the diagonal lines that are going from the upper left to the lower right kind of show splits that defenses typically take. There's obviously that big white space in the middle, that diagonal that shows, you know, it's not the players that line up right next to you. There's also a diagonal that goes from the lower left to the upper right that shows, you know, the defense a lot of times line up symmetrically. I didn't really get a sense for before I looked at it. And then there's a lot of players that line up at a 3 technique, the most common alignment. So if you line up at any position, it's very likely that you're going to look over a different technique on your opposite side. So we kind of took this and rolled it into positional cutoff on slide 4. So, you know, we started by kind of looking at all the positions and we decided that the off-ball tech, one that didn't have a direction, didn't have an idea exactly of where that player was lining up. So as far as positional categories go, we threw those players. The next position that next technique that made the most sense to categorize was outside players, the players without a hand in the dirt that are coming from the outside of the 9 technique generally. We put all those categories calling edge. And then we kind of went inside out from there. We said that any player that is at the 0 technique, 1 technique, kind of in the A gap area there, be a nose. If there was no 3 technique, anyone closer than a 3 technique on either side. Players that are kind of out of time where they have A gap, B gap as well. Now, there, the defensive tackle, as we're noting it there, is a player inside of 4 technique, not a nose. A lot of times, a player you have a little more of a question capacity, and then everything left a defensive end. Players generally be outside shoulder tackle that have pain. Those are kind of decided on. Alignment would dictate our position more than anything else. And that went there. So we can start after we establish the position. We kind of
hey, Anthony, I'm sorry. I think your audio is having a little bit of troubles. Is it possible to check in on that or maybe have one of your teammates pick up and try to narrate these slides? We're not hearing you very well.
Okay. Let me see.
Yeah, sound better now, honestly.
If you want me to keep going then?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, sure. So, you know, we started with a prior for our most valuable positions, you know, where we kind of expected edge, the players that are standing up on the outside to be the most valuable in the passing game. You know, also these players are, you know, a little more versatile than their colleagues who are going to be with their hand in the dirt. So these players also can drop into coverage if need be. The next most valuable player that we thought we might see is the nose. Like I said, these are players that are going to be kind of out on an island without a ton of help. So, you know, we figured maybe they would need to be more talented players. After that, defensive end, these are players that are, you know, going to be close to the edge, but have their hand in the dirt, obviously, so not quite as versatile. And also because they're so far on the outside of the tackle, they may not have the same opportunity to help in the run game. And then last on the list, defensive tackles, since they're, you know, so much interior linemen and maybe not having the same effect as pass rushers, as players that are to the outside of them or, you know, in have as much responsibility in run support and nose. Going on to the next one then. So to kind of establish some priors for the distribution of talent, we joined the players who played these positions the most that had more than 50 snaps to their Madden ratings from week 9 of last season, so right before the data from the competition started. The big takeaway here that we had was the nose group, where it's kind of a skinnier distribution, suggesting that maybe there's a higher ceiling and lower floor for these players, and that they just need to be good enough to take up space and not necessarily be the primary playmakers on the defensive line. And then our last prior for the situational prompt was, we figured that players that are going to be mostly pass rushers on the outside are going to affect the passing game more, which would make them more valuable in the passing game and have more of an impact there. And then in shorter goal line situations, we'd expect that interior linemen, like the defensive tackles and those tackles that we group is established, are going to be more valuable in the running game. So with that, I'll hand it over to Michael, and he can talk about how we actually attack these problems after we kind of carved out our priors.
Yeah, so now moving into our models. First, we have a pair of generalized additive models to attempt to quantify how much each player individually impacts the outcome of the play based on its EPA. We used separate models for rushing and passing, since positions can have different roles on different plays. The passing model includes pressures, sacks, interceptions, forced and recovered fumbles, and pass breakups. The rushing model includes unforced and forced and recovered fumbles, solo and assisted tackles, whether the runner used the designed run gap, and if the defender filled the gap that the runner used. So next we have a mixed effects model that we made to calculate the individual EPA random intercepts for each position. And we interpreted the intercept as the position's overall value. So on the right side of the screen, you can see the model's results. So the differences between the position's intercepts are small, but they're noticeable. Edge rushers had the most value, since negative EPA is better for a defense, and they're followed by defensive ends, defensive tackles, and nose guards. And now I'm going to pass it off to Zach for more information on the models that we used.
Yeah, so the revisiting that third question regarding different situations where positions can kind of change their values, we really wanted to key in on rushing the passer. We know that just based on the effectiveness of the pass game kind of increasing recently, and also just the volume at which teams are passing, we know that it's a very valuable part of the game, and it's really how teams are kind of building from the ground up now. So we know that turnovers, especially for individual players, are going to be very random. So the first thing we thought of looking at is sacks. But we also, have kind of learned more recently over the past couple of years through other analysis that sacks, kind of apart from QB pressures, are going to be pretty random as well. It's something that we still wanted to model just to kind of test that prior and see if any of the redefined positions that we came up with kind of showed any signal there. So it was a similar model to the one that I'll explain on the next slide, but basically, we didn't find anything different than what we already knew. If a player got a pressure on the play, it didn't really matter either how good they were or what position they were playing on that play. It was pretty random from going from pressure to if they got a sack. So that kind of led us only just modeling for generating a pressure on a specific play. So if we see on that next slide, so we used a logistic mixed model with a few factors just to determine on a given play what the probability is that the player would generate a QB pressure. And we know that, even if the player doesn't get the sack from the pressure, that quarterback play under pressure is less stable and overall worse. So even if they get a pressure without the sack, it's still valuable. So the factors that we used in this were, if they were rushing the passer or not, which, is obvious, but we don't want to predict someone too high, if they're someone that dropped back on the play. We defined our own pass down based on just some basic down and distance, pass and run rates. So that was second down and 5 yards or more, and then third or fourth down and 3 or more yards to go. So we just derived that from just the data sets splits. So it was pretty basic. And then we used the overall Madden rating. We wanted to make sure that we controlled for how good the player was. And so that's just because we saw that the distributions weren't exactly the same for player talent. So we wanted to make sure that you know, if a position wasn't the most important factor, obviously, is if they're rushing the passer. You know, we do see that if it is a passing down as we defined it, you know, they get a little bit of an increase, and then their overall rating, or, you know, what we're defining kind of as like their skill with the Madden rating, you know, is obviously not as impactful as if they're rushing or not, but we'll see that it can be around the same as kind of what the position they play is. So, you know, with the average rating based on the estimate, we see that it'll, you know, cut in half and then add or subtract based on that, based on how good or bad they are. And then the key point was the random effects on the next slide. So we were a little surprised to see some big discrepancies in positions here. Just based on the sample size, we figured that in defense being a little more random itself, that we wouldn't get this big of a discrepancy on some, you know, especially a specific type of play, but we really saw that the defensive tackle on the edge, as we define them, you know, really stuck out compared to the defensive end in the nose. And, you know, that also changes from what we had, you know, overall, where defensive ends were more valuable than defensive tackles, but we can kind of see that changing here, you know, when we're just looking at pressuring the quarterback. And yeah, I'll send it back over to Michael.
Yeah, so coming back to our original questions, starting with question number one, which defensive line position is the most valuable? After our analysis, we found that the rankings of our defined positions in terms of value are number one, edge rushers, number two, defensive ends, number three, defensive tackles, and number four, nose guards. So question two asked how the talent is distributed at positions. So as stated in our priors, we thought that nose would have a high floor but a low ceiling, as you can see with the Madden ratings. However, among players with 100 snaps at the position, nose actually had the lowest 25th percentile for individual EPA per play, as well as the lowest 75th percentile among all positions. So the ceiling is really low in that regard as well. And then when we started looking at our different situations that can make an impact, we originally thought that short yardage situations, as we mentioned, would cause a difference in our value, but we actually found that there was no difference in the ordering of positional value. The margins were just tighter between each position. We saw a much larger difference in which positions are more likely to generate a pressure. As Zach showed earlier, the random effects from the logistic mixed model show a much higher likelihood of an edge or defensive tackle getting a pressure than a defensive end or a nose. So overall, defensive end may be more valuable, but defensive tackle is better at generating pressure on the opponent's quarterback. Finally, there were a few limitations in this project, the biggest being the sample size. It's really hard to come up with any groundbreaking or indisputable conclusions from only half a season's worth of data. Overall, though, we were really pleased with the results that we got, and we think it would be really interesting to look at past NFL seasons with even more data, including like offensive formation or like personnel, or even something as advanced as player tracking data. So this concludes our slides. Thank you all for listening to us, and we can take any questions now.
That's awesome stuff. Great job, guys. Great job. Sorry, I'm getting dark here over in Pennsylvania where I am. I don't want to steal questions from the other judges. Aaron or John, did you guys have anything you wanted to ask about? All right, I'll start it off. My biggest question was about the Madden ratings. And obviously, I've been in situations where you're looking for alternate data to complement what you're given, and I see what you guys did there, and I get it. But two questions related to that. Number one, what are the shortcomings that you could see from using the Madden ratings? And then number two, I'm wondering if when you did the mixed effects model, if you looked at it without the Madden ratings and what sort of results you got without that effect being mixed into there.
So for that second question, we did. And it was definitely, there wasn't as pronounced of a difference in positions, which actually kind of surprised us. I think that once you account for, the talent as we, are using with the Madden ratings in terms of what's freely available and we could use, it actually kind of helped define which position was more valuable.
So we're talking about in terms of likelihood to generate a pressure, right?
Right, yeah, so in that situation.
So within that situation, I just want to make sure I'm processing this correctly. Within that situation, what we're saying is that by incorporating the Madden ratings, you got more of a split between positions than you did without them?
Correct.
That is interesting. What potential shortcomings could you guys see from working with the Madden ratings? Any sort of bias that could introduce?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll say that they're obviously subjective at some level. So, we're not able to incorporate anything that's going to be that we can back up. Another shortcoming with using the overall rating in particular is that, you're going to have players that are going to be inevitably better at playing the run than the pass. And, it's kind of hard to parse out, a definitive passing pressure value versus a run stopping value or, whatever attributes go into that. So I think that's kind of one of the weaknesses of it.
Yeah, and then just kind of building off of what Anthony said, I think another shortcoming is that we don't exactly know how these ratings are determined. It's even if it's not subjective, say they do have a formula for it, it's a proprietary formula. We don't know exactly how they're calculated.
Other judges, did you guys have any questions you wanted to address?
I'll throw something out there. In regards to the Madden ratings, one thing I will say is it might, I don't know how they're calculated either, but it might be a little bit circular in the sense that Madden ratings may be pulling off of production stats. So if you're using a rating that differentiates the players based off of measurable production, if you build the model off of those ratings, then it'll be a clear indicator of what you're measuring on the back end. So that's just a thought without knowing anything about Madden ratings.
That's why we used them going into when the data started, just so we could avoid that kind of as much as possible, but still get as up to date with how they were performing.
Got it. Understood.
That might be a finding unto itself.
Yeah, I think from what I can remember, I think it was more that some of the positions that were less likely came back up and the variation spread out a little more. So I think Edge was still definitely out there in front, but I think everyone kind of just came closer together without them.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. One separate question is, given the fact that some interior guys garner more double teams and potentially generate one-on-ones on the edge and give other guys pressures, and I know you guys had a limited data set, partial season, only a piece of the field, given what you had, how do you think you could capture that effect?
So I think the definition of position will help at least a little bit, just because, we defined it at the play level based on not only how, what technique they were in, but what their teammates were in as well, to the left and to the right of them. So I think that helps it a little bit, but that's probably the extent of what we had to help with that.
Good stuff. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
We got a close race so far.
Cool. Good job, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you all. Anthony, Michael, Zach, good job all around. We'll keep it rolling with Emmett Kiernan, our final presentation of the night.
Hey, guys. One quick thing just for Corey before I get started. I might not be able to see that 5-minute sign you hold up if I'm in present mode, so feel free just to interrupt me if I'm getting close. Hopefully, I'm not going to be pushing the limit, but you never know.
All right. Thanks, Emmett.
All right. Here we go. All right. So my name's Emmett Kiernan. I just finished my master's degree at Northeastern, and I actually played defensive line, but I'm not going to get too much into that because my career was cut short and wasn't that great to begin with. But in the third game of my junior season, I blew out my knee on a punt return. I was down covering the punt, and after that, it was basically a career-ending injury. So I started to get more into sports analytics and really learning to code in R and Python and The biggest project I've done so far would be the 2019 Kaggle Big Data Bowl, where me and my teammates ended up doing pretty well using a neural network and XGBoost, like GBM technically, but extreme gradient boosting ensemble model, and we ended up finishing in the 97th percentile. And kind of similar concepts here, I guess, with a lot of the lines at play. I'll start out. Initially, I took out spikes and QB kneels. I removed scrambles from the run analysis, and I took out players who I didn't consider defensive linemen, quote unquote, which was those safeties might be up on the line of scrimmage or linebackers who rushed on fewer than 50% of their passing snaps, which wasn't that many. It was just a couple who were more off-ball linebackers who I decided not to include. And I also included a column for standardized player value. So this would be a Z-score of either pick value using over the cap. So higher picks are scaled. It's not linear, just straight through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The higher picks are valued more. And then for players who were not on their rookie contract anymore, so first 4 seasons and 5 for first round picks, I used average salary data. So with the Z-score, a value of 1 is 1 standard deviation above the mean of all players. And for position definitions, I used K-means clustering on all of their technique alignments, both for run and pass snaps. So I set it up to do 3 different clusters, which was edge, tackle, and nose. And the SIS data really helped here because defensive tackle, defensive end, linebacker can be pretty vague with different schemes. For example, a player like Cam Hayward, who I think is listed as a defensive end, is much different than he plays a lot of 5 technique, 3-4. That's a much different player than a traditional pass rushing edge. And he's a lot closer to a guy like DeForest Buckner, who's listed as a D tackle. And in the same realm, DeForest Buckner is a lot different than Vita Vea. I think Buckner is something like 6'7", 290, built more like an edge a little bit. So he falls under tackle, as does a 3-4 end like Cam Hayward. And then guys like Vita Vea, Kenny Clark, Javon Hargrave, they are noses. And a lot of times you think of nose as only in a 3-4, but also in a 4-3, a lot of times there'll be 2 tackles and one will be playing the tackle and one is the nose. And the nose will play closer to the center and the tackle will play further outside, usually in a 3 technique, sometimes in a 5 even. And a lot of times that shifts based on the strong side or the weak side for the offense, which unfortunately we didn't have in this data. So here are the alignments by position. And as you can see, edge is in for more pass rushing plays than they are run plays, and they are on the outside, an outside linebacker, 9 technique, 7 technique, 6, all those. Tackle is a lot of 3 technique, 4i and 4, 5 technique, and nose is 0, 1, 2i, some 3 as well. That's the most common there. The one thing that was a little tricky was the off-ball position, which most of the time was linebackers. As you can see, edge has the most off-ball, but occasionally you'd have an interior guy listed, and one guy was Jarrell Casey, who had a lot of off-ball snaps, and at first I thought, oh, maybe that was a good data error, and went in and watched some film on Jarrell Casey, and nonetheless, there's that big 6'1", 300-pound man on a 2-point stance, like going off the guard, rushing. So that can be a little tricky because we don't have a gap or a side, which will impact some of the analysis, especially in the run game. So here's back to the resource distribution. So on average, teams dedicate the most resources toward edges. Tackle is the widest dispersion, and that makes sense. All those noses furthest behind. Tackle, sometimes you'll have guys like Aaron Donald with a big contract or high draft picks like Quinnen Williams, Derek Brown. Edges is, I guess, it would be pretty basic football knowledge to think that edge would be the most valuable position as a prior. And that lines up here with what the teams do, those with the most skin in the game. But obviously there's still a lot of analysis to do, and there's a lot of people consider Aaron Donald the best player in football. So it's definitely not a set in stone fact. And noses are pretty far behind. A lot of times that makes sense, as the players labeled as defensive tackles who go early aren't playing the nose position. And this is on a per player snap basis, so it's not impacted by more edges being on a roster or more on the field at once. So here's pressure and sack rates by position, and they follow very similar patterns, which is kind of nice, especially with only 8 seasons of data. And we can see that edges apply the most pressure. So it differs by down here, but on average, pressures are significantly higher than they are for tackle, which is slightly higher than they are for nose, and that same tendency follows for sacks as well. So the first model that I'm going to use is the only model I'm using to evaluate pass impact, which I'm focusing just on pressures here, and it's a Logit mixed effects model, kind of like what Zach and AJ and Michael used, and only passing plays where the player is rushing are included. So the formula is pressure, and then down I did as a factor because, as we saw before, it's not linear how down impacts it. Distance, technique, and then the random effects for each player. So the partial pooling component of mixed effects is really nice for players with different sample sizes because you don't have to necessarily define cutoffs, and it gives you more credit for being able to create pressure as your intercept if you have a higher sample size. And I'm using just pressures, not sacks, because Zach and that group got into that pretty well, but Timo Risk, aka Moo on Twitter, has shown that turning pressures into sacks is not a repeatable skill. And I focused on pressures, and we looked at sacks too before, rather than just dividing up EPA, because I want stats that tell us about the future and not necessarily just about the past, and that way we can avoid outcome bias. Because if a player gets a strip sack that gets recovered in the other team's territory, or you have a pressure that leads to a pick six, obviously that's great for that game, and that player did cause that impact, but it's not necessarily that much more likely that they are going to do that again. So even if that pressure or that sack caused 10 times the impact, 15 times the impact, especially going off of BPA, a very small amount of plays will impact the average, because a pick six or a fumble in the other team's territory changes the EPA a lot. So I wanted metrics that tell us more about what might happen in the future, because front offices or whoever is interested in evaluating defensive linemen cares more about the future than the past. And I did not control for air yards due to potential reverse causality, which if you have a pressure, it might be less air yards. There's some limits there, because if a quarterback is throwing a deep pass, there might be more time for the pressure, and they might be waiting longer in order just to make sure that guy gets open just in time. But due to potential issues, I left that out for now. So here's the distribution of the intercepts. I converted it to pressures over expectation out of the odds ratio, which I'm not going to get into that calculation right now. But all three had pretty similar distributions. Edge had slightly higher of a mean, and this is while controlling for technique, keep in mind. So if there's an edge who's inside at a 5 technique this play versus a tackle, they have pretty similar results, but the edge is a little bit higher with the mean. The tails on the right side, which is interesting, not all the rush metrics had that. Some of that might be survivorship bias. If a player isn't creating pressures, he's not going to get as many snaps, so he won't have as much of a chance to get that high pressure over expectation, which is where the partial pooling comes in. But edge pressures have a slight edge here, but as we saw before, they also produce them at the highest rate. So even while controlling for the other factors, the ability to produce might not be that different based on the techniques and all, but I consider them easily the most important due to producing at the highest rate, and they get the most pass rush snaps. So there's a few factors there. And then here we can look at return on investment, some of the top performers. Edge and tackle have similar return on investment, the correlation a little bit over 0.3. Nose actually has a negative correlation, which adds up a little bit, because if you have a stud nose tackle, he's there to stop the run. He's probably not there to get pressure. So it's a different skill set. Yeah, guys like Aaron Donald, Cam Hayward, TJ Watt, Za'Darius Smith, Shaq Barrett, Trey Flowers. So that makes the metric seem pretty good, because it helps confirm some priors as these are the guys you'd want to see at the top. Joey Bosa as a tackle, I guess I'll emphasize that a little bit. He played a ton of five technique, which I wasn't necessarily aware of, and he just made it into, I guess he was one of the last. I mean, there's a borderline cutoff everywhere. I'm guessing he was near the cutoff, but he played a lot of five technique as opposed to his teammate Melvin Ingram, who played a lot at outside linebacker and nine technique. So Bosa being at the five and the four eye a lot, grouped him in with, and I think he's a similar player to a guy like Cam Hayward, maybe not quite like a DJ Reader, but when we're cutting it into three groups, like, there's going to be cutoff somewhere, but figured that's relevant today with his big contract. Conclusions, I kind of went over this a little bit, but the distribution between all three is similar. Edge and tackle have the highest return on investment, but edge pressures occur in a higher percentage of snaps, and they have the greater impact on the player results. But go back here, one thing for the return on investment that I might want to do in the future would be to ease in rookies a little bit. A guy like Nick Bosa did a great job this year, but Quinnen Williams wasn't quite up to expectations, although maybe he'll get there in the future. So it might not necessarily be fair to categorize him in with a third overall pick or whatever Williams was, who's in their fourth year. So that's a future improvement, would be to slope in the rookie picks. Assumptions and limitations are not knowing the offensive lineman blocking them, who's being double-teamed, the impact coverage had on creating the pressure. This could be improved with O-line snap data. There's actually a lot more pressures on the right tackle side, which isn't that unfamiliar, but that doesn't hold for all teams. So I didn't put that into the model, because some teams who were really struggling at left tackle gave up more on left tackle. So in the future, I could have put an offensive team intercept, but I was a little worried that if you're controlling it for that point, if a team's stud left tackle gets hurt, then it'll look a lot better for the in the model for the team going up against the backup when they don't necessarily deserve that. But with snap data, which there's some publicly available and some proprietary, which could be brought into that, and obviously tracking data would help there. And with more than just 8 weeks, I'd include sacks more often or other plays like that. But with just 8 weeks, I didn't want to add noise by using sacks, because that's less repeatable and it's a very rare event, especially in 8 weeks. And one more improvement would be with the partial pooling, where possibly using priors to regress to different means. So Myles Garrett, who didn't play as many snaps because of that suspension, maybe deserves to be punished less for a small sample size because he has the draft capital in the past production. So for run defense models, it's pretty difficult to separate individual and team run defense with statistics that are out there. And because of that, I didn't want to attempt an omniscient metric that tries to put one number on player ability to stop the run, because that'd be a little misleading just due to all the limitations. So I did fit three different models, check out three more metrics, which are a little bit more specialized, and you can kind of tell exactly what it is. And although there's still some team versus individual troubles here, it is a little bit more specialized, and it's not quite so misleading as an omniscient. This player was the best against the run when maybe they weren't. And again, I didn't want to focus on like dividing up credit for EPA or on-off splits or something like that, because there is a lot of noise with EPA and on-off and everything like that. So I wanted something that would be reproducible, and I wasn't sure something like that would have much year-to-year correlation. And like I said before, we don't want outcome bias, and we want to predict the future and not the past. So the three model metrics were negative EPA tackle rate, which was tackles on a run play that had negative EPAs, success rate on run plays toward the player's side, and gap changes forced. So first off, negative EPA tackles, where nose produces them at the highest rate at about 8-9% of run plays on first and second down. The nose makes a negative EPA tackle. And again, we did a mixed effects Loget model. This one was an ordinal Loget model where the response variable can only be 0.5 or 1, which fits the proportional odds assumption. Run side is a binary variable for whether the run was toward the player's side. I didn't do gap because, as I think it was the first group said, the defensive lineman in the backfield is it oftentimes the one who disrupts the play, and maybe that's not where the gap was going. Maybe it's not the one who made the tackle. A lot can go on there. And let's see. So as factor down again, as they don't follow a linear distribution, to go run gap, run side, the technique, and then the intercept for the player. So here we can see that nose has the widest distribution and the highest mean by a little bit with the fattest tail. And I'll skip ahead here to the return on investment, which tackles, it looks like, have a pretty good return on investment, but I'm not putting too much into all these run return on investment because, as we'll see with this and a few going forward, they appear to be pretty noisy and maybe just randomly attributed, which may have to do with characteristics of stopping the run, but it may also just be that individual metrics on run defense are tough to pinpoint. And then the success rate model. So again, a mixed effects Loget and filtering out rushing plays for the direction where the defensive player lined up, unless they're in a zero technique. Offensive team is being controlled for, which I didn't feel like I could do with some of the others, but here, such as in the pass model, eventually I'd like to control for offensive team, but as I said, we didn't have left tackle, right tackle splits, but here with just success rate, the offensive team, although if you miss alignment, you're less likely to succeed, but I don't think it'll make as much difference. And we can see here again that noses have the widest distribution. The best players with these intercepts are producing 5% less successes than the expectation based on their technique and all the other factors. I had to flip those. Originally, it would have been negative since a success is the one. There's limitations with team versus player credit, especially when we're just going toward their side. And unfortunately, there's not that much we can do without player tracking or something else. O-line data, maybe who is being double teamed. I'll get into that a little bit later. And then back to this return investment, although this made me think this may be the best of the rushing metrics just based on the return on investment here. And I thought it was interesting that edges had the highest correlation, even though you wouldn't really think that edges have a big impact on the run. But maybe part of that is when a team is concerned about a player like Khalil Mack or Justin Houston coming after the passer, they put less blockers emphasizing run plays, or they're worn down, who knows. And here's the gap changes force model. So runs through the non-designated gap had a lower success rate by a pretty significant amount, 39.5% versus 45%, and also at a lower EPA by negative 0.06. This was also a mixed effects Loget model, and player is credited with contributing to the gap change if the run is toward the defensive player's side. The reason I didn't do toward their gap is because, as we mentioned, it could be someone else in the backfield that does it rather than the gap. And two, there's twists and defensive linemen switch gaps. So where they lined up isn't necessarily what they were responsible for.
Emmett, sorry to interrupt. Technically, your time is up, but take another minute or two to finish up.
All right. I'll be quick. So gap changes for us, noses have the widest distribution again. The best performers, about 6-7% more gaps forced. Like I said, the correlation with all these return investment in the run game is pretty noisy. Conclusions and future analysis. I think nose just having the most negative EPA tackles, the widest distributions, and the fattest tails in these models had the greatest impact on run. Unfortunately, the correlation between the combinations of these metrics is pretty weak, which suggests that they only paint a small portion of the picture for run defense skill, which we already knew a little bit. With more seasons of data, we calculate year-to-year stability as with correlations with PFF grades or another subjective measure on run defense or something else that we had to access run defense. And tracking data or even just info and double teams would allow for more accurate separation between team versus individual. Something with tracking data would be like the Zoo's Big Dataable winning solution, which was just for the frame at handoff, it told you likelihood of success for a run. But if you had that at every frame, you could see how that changes as different defensive players move. And another tracking data thing that I find really interesting for potential future analysis is something called ghosting, which is in basketball and soccer, where they use deep imitation learning to create like a league average player. So if a running back had some crazy like bounce off outside the tackle, you could use a ghosting running back instead of that running back and kind of see where they would have gone. And another step further from that would be, rather than just doing the one league average ghost, would be to use simulations where, if you think in video games, if you're playing against the computer reacts to where the players are based on, I'm guessing, some sort of like spatial optimization function, maybe with some sort of data similar to ghosting. But you could simulate different running back runs using slightly different pulls from a distribution to see how maybe the defense would have performed in a larger sample to avoid some outcome bias. And then the final conclusions, edge is the most valuable defensive position. It's a passing league, and edge clearly held all the advantages when it comes to defending the pass. While I consider nose to have the greatest impact on the run, I would still say tackle is the second most important because, one, the pass game is more important, and two, their return on investment is greater than that for noses. The nature of distribution is that nose has the widest distribution, which was interesting, and tackle and edge have pretty similar across the board. In which in-game or roster construction scenarios that differ, tackles cost less than edges, so maybe if you don't have the resources to get a top edge, you could go with a top tackle instead, whether it's draft pick or cap space. And in a situation where you need to prioritize the run in game, nose could be the most important. However, I don't consider that situation very often, as would most analytics people. And that's all I got.
Awesome. Fantastic, Emmett. The first question that I have is going back to the very beginning assumptions. I think, oh, look, I'm a Smurf. Going back to the original assumptions, you used the Z-scores for draft picks and based on salary. So if they were on their rookie deal, based on their draft capital, after that, based on salary. So just so that I get a sense of what kind of assumptions we're making, what would be like an average draft pick? What's a zero score draft pick? And what's a zero Z score draft pick? And what's a zero Z score salary? Is it like a $5 million player and a fourth round pick?
I don't remember that off the top of my head. I could access that real quick though. Let's see. So a zero Z score.
I'm looking for approximations just to get an idea.
Okay, so a zero Z score, some examples would be Carl Nassib. What was his salary this year? So for salary, sorry, I don't want to say the wrong approximation.
Yeah. And so it's by position. That's why you're looking at Nassib specifically?
No, I grouped them all together.
So it's overall?
Yeah. Okay.
So a $5 million quarterback and a $5 million defensive
tackle. No. I just the defensive line.
I think you can tell that by the fact that there are no nos who are listed with their standardized value being higher than 2.
Yeah.
Because they don't get paid as much as the other guys.
And Nassib got paid a little over $2 million last year, so that was for salary. And let me find a rookie.
And it would just be purely based on his draft position?
No, that Nassib was salary because he...
I'm talking about for the rookie.
Oh, sorry. Nassib was drafted in 2016. So Nassib, round
three. Quick.
So while you pull it up, because I'm curious for the answer, but I want to give my feedback also and not keep people waiting. My thought is that usually when I consider analysis that involves salary data, I'm considering a replacement level as opposed to a versus average. And a Z-score by definition is going to be a versus average sort of thing. So I wonder how the analysis would look if you had set replacement level as a Z-score of -1, for example, and keeping everything else the same. I wonder what that does to our results.
Yeah, and just to go back, it looks like an average, a 0 Z-score salary would be a little over $1 million, which makes sense because there's a lot of undrafted and players on lesser contracts. To answer your question, I think that the correlations would look pretty similar because I think it would just kind of be switching the scale instead of zero
right.
The average. So I think the correlations would look pretty similar, but in terms of interpretation, if we were actually going through the trade-off of you get this percent more negative EPA tackles, if you invest this much more draft picks, that would be a little bit different, but I didn't quite get to explain anything that way. So for future analysis, it could be framed like that if we were really to go to a causal situation.
It might have made the ROI section a little bit more robust in
yeah.
terms of that. But it's helpful to understand, I think, in general, when we say because you assign rookie contract players versus veteran players, you kind of put them on the same Z-score scale. It's helpful to understand what that scale is exactly. And it's fairly intuitive, I think.
Would I be correct in interpreting the sort of results of this as almost being, to borrow a phrase from Twitter, nose tackles don't matter? Because of the fact that on the pass rush model, the correlation between their value, you know, how much they're paid or how much draft value used on them and how productive they are is actually negative. And on two of the three run things that you did, the correlation was pretty much non-existent.
Yeah, I'd agree with that statement, especially given what we've seen. Although, just based on how limited, I guess, individual run defense is through statistics, I wouldn't want to necessarily write that in stone. But at least based on the return on investment, I'd say that at that point it doesn't matter. Well,
yeah.
Or at least you can get nose tackle production from anywhere. Although I'm not sure I'd necessarily go with the statement that nose tackles don't matter, but
I love the diplomacy. He's not saying nose tackles don't matter. He's saying he can't quantify how valuable they are.
Yeah, there we go.
John, what do you got?
Just wondering, based off of your analysis, where do you think the key arbitrage opportunities are for clubs?
I think it would be getting elite pressure from a tackle when you don't have to pay quite as much. And maybe that's a Chris Jones. They just signed him to a bigger deal, but when they won the Super Bowl, they were getting elite pressure from a Chris Jones without having put a ton of resources into him. So I think that's where the arbitrage would be.
Like a DeForest Buckner or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you paid any defensive tackles lately?
Yeah, I mean, he was cheaper than Joey Bosa, that's for sure.
Cool. Good job.
Corey?
All right. Thank you, Emmett. Judges, thank you once again. That will do it for our three group presentations. We're now going to take the time for the judges to exit. They're going to have a private conversation and deliberate and figure out who the winner will be. They'll compare their notes. Sure, it'll be a grueling task. I don't envy them. It should only be a few minutes. We hope you stick around. We have a few messages for you while we wait for the judges. first, the motivation behind this whole event and the most important aspect to us was the charitable donation. It's not too late to donate at the GoFundMe link you see on your screen. We have already received 133 donations totaling over $3,300 that will all go to the United Negro College Fund. We're thrilled by these results so far. As you can see, our original goal was $1,000. We had 34 research submissions, so that means somewhere around 100 non-participants donated, which is amazing. So on behalf of the entire team at SIS, thank you to everybody who donated. The GoFundMe campaign will remain open for donations through the end of the week. Next, the SIS Data Hub Pro. If you're watching this stream, you would definitely love it. This tool gives you unprecedented access to game, split, and season-level data from Sports Info Solutions. It includes data from every NFL game dating back to 2016, and there's a college football version that includes every FBS game back to 2016 as well. There are dozens of filters that can be used in any combination. This page here is the NFL player passing leaderboards. There are also team leaderboards and sections for every area of the game, passing, rushing, receiving, pass rush, pass defense, and more. Every section has a unique set of advanced filters. You can see the ability to filter and get results on play action passes, throws under pressure, when throwing to different positions or facing different defensive schemes. It's easy to use, and there's a lot more than what you see here. Including the ability to export all of your results to CSV. I would highly recommend anybody to sign up for a free trial that hasn't already done so. As a little bonus, the victor or the victors of the contest will receive a free one-year subscription to the SIS Data Hub Pro, so congratulations to our eventual winner. While you're here watching this stream, subscribe to our YouTube channel. We have a talented team of scouts and producers that started putting together videos a few months ago. Special shout out to Nathan Cooper, John Todd, and Noah Gatzik. You all probably know our annual SIS Football Rookie Handbook. Well, we've been doing a video series that expands on the player profiles that you'll find in the book, and it breaks down film to show their strengths and weaknesses. We even started going into some prospects for next year's draft. These are good for any big football fans, pro or college. Last but not least, we invite you to sign up for our SIS football mailing list. We'll message you about any big company announcements or promotions, but the main thing is the weekly newsletter we send out throughout the football season. I'll be the first person to tell you how good the newsletter is, since I write a fair amount of it. But we've heard from other people, too, that they like it. Last season, we did route tree comparisons between teammates Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. Well, we did the same thing for Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. We did a weekly burn report examining which corners got beat the worst that week and which receivers put up the biggest numbers against them. We cover a lot of fantasy football angles in there, too, using advanced stats. So go to the Sports Info Solutions website to sign up at the blue bar on the bottom. That does it for our messaging. I'll leave it here to rest until our judges come back with their decision. Welcome back, Aaron.
Hello, I'm back.
Looks like we've got Matt.
Soon to be followed by other people.
We're back.
Welcome.
We had a heated discussion.
Can't wait to hear about it.
I don't know if John's going to make it back. He was pretty
heated.
All right. We have all our judges. I'll turn it over to Matt with some more info.
Yeah. So just first of all, thank all of the contestants. Corey, I think we're over $4,000 now. Last time I just took a look at the GoFundMe. So I want to thank everybody that's participated in the challenge, all the finalists, and everybody that's donated, because this is a crazy time in the world, and it's really nice to be able to share some free data with the world, get people to collaborate and share their ideas here in front of all of us, and to do it all for a great cause, it's really humbling. So congratulations to everybody on that. And without further ado, we'll each give feedback to the finalists. One of the judges will give feedback to each of the finalists. And then once we finish that up, I will announce the winner. So first up, we'll go group number one. We'll do them right in order. So I think, John, you had the feedback for group one.
Yep, Andrew and Rob, great job. I thought right from the start, the strength of your project was the depths and lengths you guys went to incorporate football-specific knowledge, probably due to, Andrew, your extensive career playing college football and incorporating front identification and just the considerations that someone who hadn't played football probably wouldn't have done, and also the lengths you went to make your model agnostic and your logic in terms of how you deployed that. And just it was really comprehensive and very thorough. So good job.
Aaron has the feedback on group two.
Yeah, I think our favorite thing about group two, we really love the defining of the positions that you guys did with the DL technique correlation matrix. Like that itself was just on its own was really interesting. Also, the way that you defined the what counts as a passing down by looking at the pass data was good. And just there's a lot of really good stuff in here. Using the Madden ratings was certainly interesting as an interesting way to get a subjective value on the player.
And group three, the thing that I loved the most was something right at the front of your presentation, which was the really great clustering that you guys did that you did, Emmett, to really understand which position should be classified as what, because I thought that was one of the really key problems that was presented here. It's so simple to think, okay, we're trying to figure out what the most important position is, but what is each position? And I was really compelled by the way that you approached it, and with the results that you got, I thought they fit into really intuitive groups. So both from an analytical perspective and from a football perspective, I really liked the way that added up. Then I thought your models were excellent. I thought you used the mixed modeling approach in a really intelligent way, and you thought hard about where you wanted to fit things and where you didn't. And where I might disagree with you about your use of choosing a gap versus a side of the field to use in your mixed effects model, I thought that you made a compelling point for why you made every decision that you made. And I thought that your ROI stuff was really interesting too, because you not only took it from the extent of what do I think is the most important position on a down-to-down basis, but you also were able to extend that to where should we invest our resources. And when John challenged you with a question, for example, about where you see the market inefficiencies, you were right on top of it, and you know exactly where you wanted to go with that. So I was really impressed with that. So without further ado, each of the three groups, you guys were absolutely outstanding, and we're very thankful to all of the people that participated. Alex Vigderman wrote a really great piece you can find on Sports Info Solutions blog that talks about all of the submissions that we had. But there's only going to be one winner. And so the winner, who will be appearing on the Off the Charts Football Podcast and who will be receiving a free year of the Data Hub Pro, is Emmett Kiernan. Congratulations, Emmett.
Congratulations, man.
Congrats, Emmett.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. And both other teams had incredible submissions, and even the other ones who didn't make the finals, there was some incredible stuff. So I really appreciate it.
Fantastic stuff all around. We'll be in touch with each of the teams. Corey, anything you want to say to wrap up?
No, I think you did a great job of summarizing everything. Great job to everybody. Can't overstate that. Emmett, congratulations. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys for the work you did. Thank you. Thank everybody who did work. It was really awesome. There was lots of good stuff. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, no, thanks for putting this on, and especially for such a great cause. Makes it really meaningful, and I hope that more happen years in the future.
The GoFundMe stink, the GoFundMe link, not stink, is still active through the end of the week. So anybody who is looking to still contribute to a good cause, please, you can see it there. Thank you to everybody, yeah?
Yep. On behalf of all of our judges, all of our contestants, both here and previously participating, everybody watching at home, and on behalf of myself, thank you, everybody. Have a great night.